Welcome back, Survivor fans. It is season 25 of the most important national TV moment we had last night on October 3rd. I'm talking, of course, about... No, not the debates. What are you thinking? No. Survivor, people. Survivor.
I love how you're trying to... you're trying to
engage,
be all like... No, I was going to say be like all Letterman and Leno about it, like, and act like this actually is happening when they possibly are listening to it, as
correct,
opposed to when we're actually recording it.
Yeah, and now that we have a new drop date, you know, it's going to really kind of mess with the whole timeline.
Right, yeah. So programming note for the listeners out there, I know you're all accustomed to being able to download the new podcast a mere hours after the episode is over. But unfortunately, scheduling is going to push that back to now like a Thursday evening posting time. Most weeks.
We're just busy guys, you know. We got full lives. And,
yeah,
we're in
high demand. We're guesting on other podcasts. Not really. Although that would be awesome
maybe
if we could get ourselves guested on other podcasts.
Right, we're just podcasting community in general. We're all coming together, you know.
Right.
If you missed last week's episode, Chris got married, and ladies, I'm still single. What's up? I'm Ralph, that's Chris. We didn't really do intros. And this is a Survivor podcast, although it seldom resembles that.
Indeed. It's really just Ralph and I's like check-in call, our weekly check-in call, and periodically
yeah,
we
like
sprinkle
to make sure
in
he's doing all right, and
we sprinkle in a tidbit about tribal council here and there.
There's a tribal council? Oh, right. That's what we are. We're a tribal council spelled, you know, trickily in a wordplay way. You know, we give our take and you absorb it and you hit us back with the love on the social medias.
Indeed.
Or not. I don't know.
yeah, where's Mike K from SoCal, man? I was waiting on our shout from him with a little,
you know,
fact checking on the last podcast and we didn't
get
that.
I feel like it's less on us to drum up the reader participation as much as it is the season. And I gotta say, not promising so far.
Not whatsoever. I mean, we even got the full intro at the beginning of this episode. I mean, like that's like the beacon. That's like the mating call of the dud episode.
And I was a little hopeful because we got the immunity challenge at like 19 minutes of the 60, and I was like, well, that's a little early. So maybe we're in for some good scrambling. But really, what we got was like just some extra tidbits from the other tribes before the, you know, the team that went to tribal council went.
Yeah, it was a boring. It was an overall fairly boring episode. So
kind of a
settle in,
so,
listeners, for a fairly boring podcast.
We're gonna keep it light today. You know, we're gonna try to move this thing through. I guess my question for you, Chris, is three tribes working?
I don't think so. I think three tribes is so boring to me because you know, it's
we
so
don't see
easy.
Two-thirds of the island.
What's that?
We don't see two-thirds of the island.
Right, yeah, it's much more to keep track of as a viewer, and at this point, it's not easy. You know, at the beginning of each season, it's always difficult. Like, you sort of have to commit yourself at the beginning of each season and, like, force yourself through those first three or four episodes until you actually know who everybody is and get yourself invested. And you're like, oh, okay, now I can keep track of what's going on the island. Whereas, you know, and now with three islands, it's much more difficult. It's, you know, Carter, I barely remembered who he was. I actually, when
I wanted to call him Cooper.
when Probst mentioned him during the challenge, I had to take a moment and be like, did we even name him last week when we were going through all of the people?
I think we did.
I think we did. I wasn't sure. So,
yeah,
I think it only works unless you ditch it after two challenges. Because otherwise, it's so easy because of the fact that tribes are so small for what's happening in this season to happen all the time, where one tribe just quickly goes down hard.
Here's what I want. I want a shuffle to happen next week, and I want two from each of the red and yellow tribes and one each from the blue team to make three tribes of five. You know what I'm saying? Like, stay with three tribes, but give it, like,
wait, say that
equally...
again? How did you want the breakdown?
Make it three tribes of five, but
right,
each five is two red, two yellow, and one blue, right?
Okay.
And then you have this like little red and yellow battle,
and
where
then
like
the blue
blue's
becomes
in the middle,
swing,
and the red and yellow can kind of try to pretend like they're
Well, the thing is there's no bonds there. That's the nice thing about doing a shuffle like that. I think that's the kind of shuffle that gives new life to the blue team, because the red,
again, being the middle of the 2-on-2, they have a lot of power there that they don't have.
Well, but even that, like, there's no real allegiance within the yellows and the reds, because they haven't been. They haven't been to tribal. Because they haven't been to tribal yet. I mean, Penner and Jeff Kent actually said exactly what we've said in the last couple of seasons, is that an alliance is only as good as how hard it's been tested, and they haven't been tested yet. You know, like, alliances don't mean anything until you actually have to go make a vote.
Yeah, Pete in this episode said something about how an alliance is only as good as the day it was formed, and I was like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, that one was a weird. That was a weird little anecdote.
It doesn't work that way. You gotta go in and actually make that move on the paper and say, this is how we're gonna vote. You know?
Right. Yeah. I think what he was trying to say was not how it came out. I mean, I think he was trying to say something a little similar to what Kent and Penner put much better, and that, you know, you and I, of course, have put the best.
Over
the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
And it looks like there isn't a shuffle coming yet, because we saw previews of another challenge that appear to be blue, red, and yellow, with blue looking like there's still just the three.
Yeah. Well, let's start from the beginning.
Yes.
You know, we brought up some good points, but
yeah.
Hey, I guess we can start with Abby and RC breaking up.
Right. I mean, Abby seems like hell-bent on digging herself into a hole, like, you know, like, everybody seems to be trying to help her, save her from herself. You know, like, RC...
What do you mean by that?
Well, like, RC seems to want this to work, and seems to be trying to, like, patch things and, like, do everything she can to be like, no, there's nothing to be... And she's not even being, like, stupidly overt about it in a way where you would feel like you were being pandered to.
No,
like,
I agree.
She's doing it very well, and Abby is just hell-bent on, like, sabotaging that there.
She just seems insecure and suspicious, and, you know, she's obviously trying to still feel out where her loyalty should be. And I guess, ultimately, I appreciate that. And I've never liked it when people struck up an alliance on day one and didn't evaluate it along the path to say...
Right.
Well, this does make sense, what I did on day one, or this does not make sense. So I will award her for that, and it looks like she has someone she does trust more in Peter.
Yeah, but she just, I mean, I'll agree with you that it's good to be, you know, constantly evaluating where you're at and who your allies are and if it makes sense for them to be your allies, but like...
Right, you made that deal on day one. What did you know? What did you know?
It seems like this is more indicative of crazy than it is of savvy.
No, yeah. That's true. This is more born out of personal problems than actual gameplay.
Yeah. Right.
So Peter, we find out, is a player.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he woke up quickly there.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what swung the tide, but I guess he was, you know, I guess ultimately we would approve the strategy of, for the first week or so, lay low, kind of take the temperature of what's going on and then decide which direction to go. And he's decided that he's going to, you know, round the bunch up and include Lisa because, as I would agree with, she's not going to be a threat later on.
No, yeah, she's not. And she's going to be real easy to manipulate and put in your pocket.
Especially since having felt alienated, having felt like she didn't have
a chance
in the
game. She's going to latch on to the first person.
Exactly. Yeah, that is so observant.
And he made the right move.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't had this Dato when I was trying to pick my horse, because he looks like a good candidate now.
Yeah, indeed.
So, we got our first poker analogy.
He doesn't see, the one thing about Pete is he seems to not have the math right. I mean, he was talking about...
the three? Yeah,
he's like, three. We got three votes, and that's it. I was like, I don't think that's quite it.
Right, you still need artists.
Yeah, well, that's what I wondered. Is Artis in his court already, and he's just...
Artis is, he's on Artis Island.
He's playing his own game.
He's got his own game.
All right, go ahead, yes.
We got a poker analogy, Chris.
Right, from probably the person I least expected to hear a poker analogy.
From Blair.
Yep, from Blair.
So Blair says that she's getting new hand dealt every day, and she's playing her card. So, true or false, the poker analogy works.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's right. Like, I think she's right. You know, there's each day, like, things change so quickly in the game, and so in a sense, you are getting a new hand every time. I mean, maybe not a new hand. I feel like a more apt analogy might be like, you know, it's Texas Hold'em, and only there's 39 community cards. You know,
and there's another card hitting the board.
Exactly, there's just a new card hitting the board, changing the dynamic. But everything that happened up until that point is not just thrown away into, you know, old hands. It's all still one giant hand. so you know, we've got the turn, the river, the creek, the stream.
The brook,
the waterfalls.
Gully, the canal.
Yeah,
did you ever
figure
out that Dutch word you were looking for the other night?
The Dutch word I was looking for?
Those canals in the Netherlands that you were trying to think of.
I think it was canals. I don't know. I think that was it, and I had in my mind somehow it was a like more special word than canals or something like that.
So we cut over to Red Camp, and something that was genuinely interesting in this episode is the fact that people figure out the idol's gone by noticing the missing medallion off of the rice container.
Yeah.
And I think it's a nice twist to have it be there where it's like, okay, there's visibly something different, so clearly someone has it.
Right. Right.
What do you think your ramifications are in terms of gameplay versus the totally secret, you kind of have to theorize or, you know, kind of deduce that they have the idol instead of it being very clear that someone has it?
Well, I think ultimately it really doesn't change anything, actually.
Mm.
Because of the fact that the hidden immunity idol has become, you know, it's ubiquitous now. Everybody knows it's there, and actually, I guess I shouldn't say the hidden immunity idol is ubiquitous, but the speculation about it is. You know, it shows up in every episode. It showed up in the first episode, if I'm not mistaken, with Russell and Zane, and people were discussing whether or not they thought Russell might have it, and if they needed to be prepared for that. So, you know, it just puts a finer point on it, I think, you know, that it becomes a little more obvious that it's out there and that somebody probably has it. But they all already are so on such high alert for it that I don't think it changes things too much.
So clearly the next step then is to have a season in which they have clues for an idol but no idol.
That would be awesome. That'd be fun.
That's what I'm saying. Mark, get on it, man.
Right.
Like, you know, put it out there like, hey, here's where to find it, and it's not there, and everyone just kind of speculates, and we run around in circles, and
right. And
no one has it.
That's pretty good. I do like
Thank
that.
You. Thank
that's
you.
Good.
Sometimes I contribute to this show, Chris.
Have I ever held you down, made you feel like you were less of a partner in this show?
Yeah, well, now you won't, so...
Okay. You got something to hang your hat on, I guess.
Okay, anything else on Red Team before we go to Blue?
I thought Penner did a decent job of trying to play it cool there, despite the fact that everybody was going to immediately leap to him. I mean,
right, yeah.
But ultimately, I think that's by no fault of his own. You know, he's already just been demonized within that tribe, but mainly by Jeff Kent at the beginning,
right.
It looked like.
Correct.
But I felt like he did a good job of playing it cool when they started talking about it, and he was just sort of like, oh, yeah, there was something there or whatever. You know, he didn't, like, play totally silent. He didn't swing to the other end and be like, what? There was something there? What are you talking about? You know, so...
But he's an actor. Like,
is he?
Like, isn't he?
I don't know. What is his profession?
I thought he was.
His profession is Survivor All-Star. That's his profession.
Well, hey... Some people make a living, like those kids on. He's an actor, writer, film producer.
Oh, is he really?
Yes.
Oh, I had no idea.
Like those kids on MTV's Road Rules, Real World Challenge, like that's their income.
The gravy trainers, yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Oh, those, yeah, they're. I mean, like Ruthie, and who else was there? Who else are the gravy trainers? You got.
It's been too long. I haven't been plugged into the channel.
I know. There's CT from Paris. That dude. I mean, if he didn't know anybody, you'd say he was trying to break into UFC via via MTV Real World Road Rules.
It worked
Challenge.
For The Miz. The Miz is now in WWE. That's really good for him.
And he won a belt, I think. He won the Intercontinental title.
Everyone wins a belt.
That's true.
They all win belts.
It's a very progressive approach to very capitalistic.
Jonas has been wanting to get in on the pod, and I think you know, a little wrestling corner for him might be the perfect opportunity.
I don't think that quite fits with our... Well, actually, what am I talking about? Just about anything fits with this format. We are potpourri with a slightly heavy sprinkling of Survivor.
Yeah, that's the main flavor, but it's just the background. Exactly. Cut over to Blue Camp, and I loved coming back from commercial and being like, why are we looking at this raft? And we find out that they didn't stick it above the tide line. So,
whoops.
Yeah, you know, when it rains, it pours for Blue.
Yeah. I thought it would, because just after that is when they cut to the challenge, and that challenge was out on a little pontoon or whatever the heck that's called. Is that
yeah,
right
Blue
word?
Team had to swim there. That's
yeah, right. Well, and are they all on different islands? No,
I don't know.
They walk in. I think they're all on one big island.
Well, someone had to take them. They couldn't walk to that little platform. Chris,
well, yes,
on.
That's true. But I thought it would have been funny if the producers or somebody had corralled their raft and had it off on the side and hey, you guys lose something, sort of rub it in a little bit, let the other tribes be like, wow, these people really do stink, we just need to kick their teeth in some more. I don't know, I thought it would have been a fun little,
I kind of thought that I guess they always are, I kind of thought they only had the helicopter for maybe a week or two, and they just shot a bunch of stuff around the island. But now I think about they're always taking helicopter shots of
oh yeah,
the castaway is walking from place to place.
Well, and
so.
and Burnett is the king of the shot where start out really wide,
little.
Zooming in slowly, and then all of a sudden, super zoom in at hyper speed, and there you are right on top of the tribe walking down the beach.
Or at the beginning of the season when he start really tight on Jeff, and then all of a sudden it blows out.
Oh right, yes, this the inverse of that
on a volcano or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Or the you're picturing the water spouts at that
In Samoa.
In Samoa, yeah. Which actually that was a pretty cool shot.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
The meaty portion of the Blue Camp visit was the reconfirmation of Denise and Malcolm's alliance.
Yeah,
which...
I was surprised. I wasn't certain that they were the tight pair there. I thought it was Angie and Malcolm. But props to Malcolm for being wise about his alliance making.
Yeah, could weaker men have withstood the allure of Miss Utah Teen? I don't think so.
Miss Teen Utah. Yeah, I don't. I agree. I give him props. By the way, while we're on the subject of Malcolm, upon further review, I completely disagree. I don't think I look anything like him. I would love to actually look something like him, because then I would be some sort of pseudo Adonis or something, but I and other common friends of ours have disagreed.
Nah.
They've said maybe, but maybe in tiny ways, but no full agreement.
As as a minority, I think all you white folks look the same. Anyway,
there we go. I was waiting for that.
It's just my racial bias.
I see. There you go.
You look a lot like Probst and. You look a lot like Scoopin' and Penner. A little like Peter.
Yeah.
Kind of like Mitt Romney.
Okay.
Anyways.
So let's talk about the challenge.
Yeah, the challenge. I'd like to say, first off, welcome, back in the ocean.
I noticed that too, yeah. Oh, this isn't the first one. The others were back in the ocean, too.
Yeah, but this one had the depth, and that was really cool. Some of the shots of, especially the girls when they would swim back up to the top and their little kicks, and it was it kind of looks really
they were going a ways down there. That last one was probably
12, 15 feet down.
Oh, at least probably. There was eight of them, and they're they were
each
probably a good foot and
apart.
A half to 2 feet apart. So I would say easily 16 to 20 feet down.
Yeah. Now the shot of RC, pulling that, running herself down the rope and then, swimming her way back up, I thought was. It was beautiful. I don't know.
Yeah.
You aesthetically pleasing challenges.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was pretty cool.
RC is already aesthetically pleasing, and then you put her in this underwater paradise, and it's like, okay.
Ralph, when are you going to stop using this podcast as a means to get ahead trying to flirt with half of the Survivor contestant pool?
Hey, Burnett knows what he's doing when he's casting, man. And you know what? Let's not say that RC is just good looks, because she is both a challenge master and
she is
a strategic player. So
she went after it there. She went. Did she go four times? I think
she went three in a row, and then a fourth.
And
time,
then a fourth later on. Like, she was a horse, and to be honest, that was really smart. I think, like, regardless of whether or not she was the best amongst them, like,
to go back was smart.
Even if she's just average, it's smart because you're not wasting time getting up on the platform and then tagging someone in, like, you're just going. And she clearly was doing well anyway.
Didn't adapt that challenge, that strategy either.
Who didn't?
None of the other teams. No one went back-to-back.
That's true, yeah. Nobody else was doing back-to-back.
Denise could have done it. Malcolm could have done it. That might have really...
That might have caught them up a little better, yep. Although they seem to be in a decent rhythm going back and forth. And I guess, you know... As long as you have equally strong people like the two of them, the back and forth might actually be the best way, because it gives you a chance to catch your breath. If you're diving in, depending on how efficient you are with your dive, you might be able to get down there.
It didn't seem like they could
dive
far
straight
enough.
Down off of the pontoon. Yeah,
they had to dive out and then swim, and then, like, the smarter people were using the rope to get down to where they needed to go.
Recollect the shards of glass they had created from their dive.
Yeah, that was like what the little like summary in my TV guide was like trying to play up. It's like, oh, one of the formerly airlifted survivors gets a new wound, and it's like, okay, he scratched his face. Come on.
But still, it's scooping, and it's just amazing that this guy finds like new and unique ways to injure himself, like at every turn.
More importantly, why did he pass the mask when he knew he'd blown it out?
Well, yeah.
He still gave it to RC.
Yeah. What's amazing is he didn't end up with, like, shards of glass in his eyes.
Yes.
Like he dodged a major bullet there.
Yes. You have to think he did.
Yeah,
you have
definitely.
To think he did. Although, maybe the water rushing in had something to do with, like, keeping it from going straight at his eye. Who knows? Who knows? Yeah, so... Where were we going with that?
Well, I mean, you know, there's how incredibly neutered both Russell and Angie are on the is that the right name, Angie? Yeah, Angie.
Yeah.
Are on that challenge. I mean, Angie was awful on the first one where you're not even having to go underwater for it.
Yeah, but I genuinely think she didn't have the strength to push the floating thing down in order to pull that little latch up and turn it to get it through the hole, you know?
Really? I mean, well, all you had to do is use the one as the as leverage against the other.
Well, yeah, I know. I just don't think she had, like, the strength to, like, pull that thing back and then turn it and pass it back through the hole, because that's what she had to do. Now,
right.
You saw later on the key was to, like, put your foot on that thing,
yeah, that's what
pull
I'm saying,
it up,
yeah.
And use your own leverage to kind of get it through there, but I guess that close to the surface, she didn't really have the thought of that. But
yeah, maybe.
You know, she mentioned later on that she never said during the challenge that she couldn't do it, but they clearly caught her saying, "I can't do it."
Oh, did you go back and check it?
I went back and watched it. Yeah,
oh,
no,
yeah.
There's a clip where Denise is asking her if she's going to go again. She's like, "I can't," and Denise is like, "Fine, then stay." And she was,
oh really?
You know, Denise is very take charge about it. She's like, "It's fine." She didn't make a big deal about it, but
right.
She did say, "I can't."
And ultimately, it's funny. They sort of get into this, like, you know, which was better, Russell trying and then giving up, or her just throwing it in right away and saying, "I'm clearly not the best person to be doing this." And I think there are merits to her approach.
Yeah.
You know, as Malcolm pointed out, he's like, you know, the second Denise and I realize that we're way better at this than the other two, like, we need to just take charge and say, it's us
two. Go back
two,
and forth, yeah.
Like, and we're going to do it because it just makes, you know, unless the two of us are just absolutely exhausted, there's no reason for the other two to be going in there.
I think that's
and Russell
the
doesn't know
of, like,
how to operate a ladder. I mean, that's just weird.
You would think in a smaller group it would be easier to kind of make these decisions.
Indeed, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you just go, and it's like, you know, you get one other person to agree with you, and you just hit half the people in the tribe, so you don't have to worry too much about getting consensus and, like, the rest of the tribe getting mad at you for sort of commandeering the challenge and saying, like, it's on us, like, let us go.
One of the few benefits I've seen of the three tribe setup is that we're getting into the smaller group dynamics much faster, almost immediately, because, you know, we have such small groups to work with. So you're seeing people having to take ownership for their decisions much more quickly, and they can't just kind of ride whatever the wave is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. They can't just ride it out simply because they're in an alliance and they're a vote worth keeping around, yeah. Because you get too quickly to the point where you need everybody to matter in the challenges, not just in the votes.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I remember, the season or two before, just having just people, three and four people in a tribe being completely in the background while four or five of the rest really just are the focus. So I think we need to see a few more episodes before we kind of drive the nail in the three tribe coffin.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I just don't like about it is that it's so, like I said, it's so easy for it to get down to such a one tribe just getting decimated, and then on top of that just, you know, it just makes for a few more boring tribals once you merge, because they're the most likely to then be voted out already anyway, because they've just got no allies around. I mean, the way you pitched it, you know, forcing it to go 2-2-1 of red, yellow, and blue in a shuffle certainly helps, but you also just can't sustain a three tribe system much longer than, you know, down to 14 people. You get down to 14 people and it's just, you know, it's too little.
Yeah, but I also, as a fan of the show, like the double shuffle, like shuffle once and then merge again later, or shuffle.
That's true. Yeah, the repeated shuffling, so that you get a whole bunch of like very light bonds between people and no like super heavy entrenched ones. I mean, I think I actually mentioned that last season as an idea where like literally redraw tribes like
weekly.
Every week.
Weekly.
And just like, I mean, that would really play into Blair's analogy of getting a new hand dealt every
call
day.
Call it Survivor Anarchy, you know?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Nothing ever stays the same.
Survivor Chaos Theory.
All the time. Yeah. No, I think there's merits to that game. It's an interesting twist on the common theme, and certainly after 25 seasons, you know, some people want to see twists in the game. I don't know.
Indeed.
Okay, so challenge is over, and we don't go back to blue, we go back to red camp, where Penner approaches Kent to tell him that the rumors are true, he's got the hidden immunity idol.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so I thought Jeff Kent, who I can never refer to just as Jeff.
Jeff, right, yeah. We know his last name, so we have to use it.
It's two syllables, Jeff Kent. You know, Steve Holt.
That's true. Yeah. Who's Steve Holt?
Steve Holt? Nah, sorry. It's, Arrested Development.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not arrested. I'm not a. What do you call someone who
this
follows
this show? This is uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was three seasons. I watched the whole thing during one sick leave from work that spanned a weekend and half of a week, and I was laid up in bed and I turned Hulu on and I just let it run.
Yeah.
Until I was done. I burned
nice.
Through the whole three seasons.
Nice.
And it was amazing. So yeah. So Jeff Kent, again, you can't say his name, whatever. Jeff Kent did a good job of not revealing his hand and allowing Penner to think he was getting what he wanted.
What is his hand?
Well, his hand is that, you know, he's ultimately trying to get Penner to go home, you know, without playing the idol, you know. And obviously he wouldn't reveal it that way, but, you know, he rolled with the punches well and he sold it that, like, yeah, I think working together is a good idea. Now, obviously you know, with a little, you know, going fast-forwarding 30 minutes, we find out that they may actually be working together, but...
Oh, from the previews for next week?
Right, but...
Yeah. I think even at the time, I feel like he was being genuine in his... even at the time, like, regardless of what happens in the future, it seemed like he was being genuine in his, you know, accepting what John said and sort of being willing to work with him there. I don't think he was just placating and letting John feel like he had...
But then he did the whole thing about the four-fingered handshake afterwards, Chris.
Oh, that's true. He did. I forgot. Yes, that's right. I was not aware that finger count in a handshake was a barometer for how much you could trust the person as they're making the handshake.
So the rules go, Chris, that if it's an odd-numbered handshake, then it's genuine. If it's an even-numbered handshake, then it's not. Or, alternatively, a prime-number fingered handshake is genuine. And a
four is the only not well no well on one what which one. Way does one go? One's a composite and a prime. I don't know which or neither composite nor prime, so I'm not sure which way that goes.
It is
I think I like the odd better because you know there's the pinky swear, so that's like the one fingered handshake. I'm not sure how you do a three fingered handshake. Yeah, as we both sort of try to gesture to each other here.
Right.
On
Skype. Wish this was a video podcast, everyone. I wish you could see this.
Oh well. I was not aware that was a thing. Is that a thing? I mean,
I've never heard of that.
Okay,
I've never heard of that.
So it's not a thing in our small circle of friends in Chicago.
Well, shame on Penner for not knowing these rules. I mean, clearly going into the game, you got to know the finger rules
exactly
for the handshake deals that you make while you're on the island.
Yeah, cut to the confessional shot of Penner being like, "Yeah, I talked to Jeff Kent and we shook hands. He has oddly small hands, though. I didn't."
He was holding his fingers crossed behind his back. I don't know if that's a bad thing. You know,
exactly.
Maybe I should be suspicious.
When we shook hands, it looked a little bit more like he was about to take a sip of tea or something, the way he held out his pinky. I don't know. Is this indicative of something? Maybe he's British.
I think we've beaten it into the ground. I think it's over.
We have.
Okay, so cut over to Yellow, and the tribe goes clam hunting, and Abby and Peter conveniently decide to stay behind.
Indeed.
And Abby is struck with a bolt of lightning. Maybe there's this thing on the rice, and I need to check that. So
after scouring the beach and then claiming at the end of the whole thing, "I knew it was there. I knew that was it." I love it when people do that. And it's like there are legitimate cases where you knew it was there, but like
it's
we've got
bad
footage of you like run scurrying all over your beach.
It's as bad as the saying, "You always find it in the last place you look."
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, yeah, because you wouldn't keep looking.
Exactly. Exactly. Which reminds me, actually, of the, like, you ever play that game? What was that game? Was it, it wasn't Heads Up 7-Up. There was a game you played in, like, elementary school where, like, you had, like, two teams or something, and, like, one team would leave the room, and the other team would, like, hide something around the room or something, and then the other team had to go hunt and find it or something like that.
I've never heard of this game.
But you had to, but you wanted to be the first one to find it, or you didn't want to be, like, the last one to get in your seat. And so, like, you would always – I remember there were multiple teams and they all would leave or something. I don't know. But, like, you would always – when you found it, like, you learned after playing it two or three times, like, that you didn't go immediately to your seat after you found it because then everybody knew, like, that's where it is. Mm-hmm. So you always, like, looked in a few more places and then made your way to your seat. I don't know. I don't remember the rules.
So you're saying Abby should have just turned over some more rocks and then been like, "Oh, clearly it was on the beach." Just like I thought it was.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, obviously they're not paying very close attention to her. Hell, Pete seemed like he wasn't even paying very close attention to her. Because, like, she's like, I found it, and he just keeps walking away from her on the beach there. I was like, wow, Pete is not impressed. Like, all right, great, you found it. Go away, you crazy woman.
In some cases, Pete has to be thankful that he's got an ally and just really kind of pissed that it's Abby. Like, you know,
I don't know if he's actually aware of it yet. Does he? I mean, has he talked much about his?
Yeah, we need to know more about Peter.
His awareness of her being a little bit nuts.
I
don't think he has.
He'll find out just like RC did.
Right. Exactly. Next week, you know, she's going to go off on him about sharing the idol clue, even though she already has the idol.
It just. Like, oh, she was such a B-I-T-C-H to RC. Just, it was bad.
How does it make it any... Are you under the impression that a portion of our listeners can't
spell?
They're
4 years old. They're like we have four-year-old listeners, and as long as like I don't say it, then I feel better. Like, I said a bad word on the last podcast, and I don't want to get a bad rating.
Did you? What did you? Did you drop the S-bomb? I think
I did. I dropped the S-bomb.
Yeah, you did. That's right.
I feel terrible about it.
Oh, well. It's all right.
Yeah. I will now be saying duty instead. I'll use the word duty.
Go for crap. I use crap a lot. I mean, I'm a teacher, and I'll use crap in my classroom. Like, usually when I'm looking to drop an S-bomb, I'll replace it with crap.
Mm.
It flies, and it usually works.
Yeah. Like I say, nothing gets the class's attention better than swearing, Chris.
It's true. That's true. If they're not paying attention, it is a good way.
You just got to play that card sparingly. You'll be
right. Yeah, exactly. Before they just start thinking I'm like
a sailor.
I'm like ex-Navy turned teacher or something.
All right, let's get to the scrambling. Denise and Malcolm feel justifiably secure, and Angie tries to sell her case, and Russell is just relying on his connections to his ancestors.
Right. Yeah, I'm not going to give up. But then we don't see much of him not giving up.
Well, his idea of not giving up is going into tribal and bullying a 20-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Not that she can't stick up for herself, but
he got really into some dangerous territory there. I actually made a note about that. Like, I think he got lucky there. Like, if she cries even just a little, like, she very well managed her emotions really well there, and like, you had to be paying close attention to know she was crying. And I think if she went any deeper into that, it might have swung things. Like, you know, the others might have really been like, wow, like, I can't keep this guy around if this is how he's going to treat somebody, you know? Like, I don't know. I mean, I may be giving the others a little too much, like, ethical credit or something like that. But
yeah, I think, but I you kind of have to be objective in this game, and yeah, he was brutal, but
yeah.
You understood why he had to be. You know, like, he had to call out what was his advantage, which was, she is not strong. You know?
Right. But yeah, there are ways to do it that are better than that, though.
Like, well, yeah, I'm not arguing that. I'm not arguing that at all. But, like, you know, he accomplished what he needed to do, which was to emphasize that his ability to keep the other two people, namely Denise and Malcolm, his ability to keep them in the game was better than Angie's ability. And the numbers they're at now, clearly, I think,
right,
they had to vote Angie off.
Oh, yeah. I think it was a no-brainer. As Jeff said, I think what Russell's saying is, you can't hold a candle to him. Which, when literally, like, six lines earlier, Russell had actually used the exact line.
You can't hold a candle to me.
Yeah.
Right.
I particularly enjoyed when Russell went to the, like, I nearly died the last time I played this game. It was great. And the best is her response. He's like, are you willing to give your life? And she just gives a cheery yes. It was such a perfect encapsulation of the thing. I mean, it's very similar to last week's, like, how about cookies? How about
3 days
get
ago,
cookies?
3 days ago, she said cookies, and now she's like, I'll die for this game.
Yes, sure. Like, she's just a little too wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, is that the right phrase, about it all. I mean, and you heard it earlier, too, like, you know, she was in a confessional, she said something about, you know, like, I'm a competitor. I want to win, and that's my number one goal. And it was just like, I mean, it's so funny. I mean, everybody has goals, and some people are really good about writing them down and stuff like that, but it's just, I mean, is it just me, or does that just reek of youth when somebody says that?
Like, you know, we've been seeing more of that lately. Maybe I just wasn't clued into it, but, you know, I'm older now than when the game started, and I kind of realize just what the game's trying to do by putting, you know, 19 and 20-year-olds into the game with 35 and 40-year-olds, and it's just the disparity they have in terms of perspective and understanding what struggle is and what challenges are, and you know, I think, yeah, but that's what youthful optimism is. That's why we coin it youthful optimism. Like, when you're young, you think that this is what, you know, you are going to do, and you don't know until you're put in that situation, you know, and some of the people, Russell literally has been put in that situation, but other people in terms of comparable life situations have had to, you know, struggle and put up and persevere. And as a 20-year-old, you're just not facing that. A pageant cycle is not anything right. to compare it to. I'm sorry.
Right. Indeed.
I'm sorry.
Did you pick up? I thought this was really funny. You know, at the beginning of Tribal, Jeff asks, he asked some question. I don't even remember what the question was exactly, but it was sort of like it opened people up to, like, you know, what did you give up to be here sort of stuff, you know, and they started talking about that. And Denise mentions having her own practice
mm-hmm.
and says, I hope my clients are okay. She's a sex therapist. Like, what do you mean, I hope they're okay? Like, I'm going to go out on a limb. I could be wrong. I could totally be wrong, so I will acknowledge that up front. But, like, I'm going to go out on a limb and say she's not, like, treating people who are suicidal via sex therapy or something here.
That would be an unconventional solution to right, suicidal thoughts, is to
I'm pretty sure her client base is just people, like, couples who, like, have lost the spark and they're trying to reignite it. Am I mistaken? Like,
I don't know. I've never seen a sex therapist, Chris. This may shock you.
Okay.
I've never gone to a sex therapist.
Fair enough. But I had a moment of, like, the Seinfeld episode with when he dates the dermatologist, and she's so dramatic when she talks about her job, about, you know, saving lives and stuff like that. And he's like, what? You're a dermatologist. What's the worst thing you have to do? A bad case of acne? You prescribe some cream? Like, what are you saving lives? And then, of course, she goes to, like, hello, skin cancer? And he's like, oh, skin cancer. Didn't think of that one. And he totally lays into it at dinner.
So what is the deadliest after effect of sex, then? What could possibly be?
Right. Well, could it be somebody who's
sex. HIV positive, who, like, has this urge to want to infect others, like... I mean, that would
wow,
be...
Wow, you
extreme.
Went to the dark place I'm quickly just saying. There. Wow.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think it's more the other way around, really, we're talking about here. I think it's more the, you know, it's... The people that are seeing her are, you know, trying to better their lives through sex, not...
not correct their issues, but
not necessarily. Maybe what do I know about a sex?
What do you
therapist?
Know about sex therapy?
Not much.
Yeah. You found out your wife's listening, so just be careful.
Yes. Count. Put another one on the board. My wife has rejoined the ranks of our listenership. Of course, I'll probably get crap for it again now that I felt like I brought that up, and she's gonna be like, "Oh, what are they gonna think? What kind of a wife am I? I don't even listen to my own husband's podcast. I listen to other people's podcasts. I won't listen to my own husband's podcast."
Oh. Well, I will say I'm not 100% a listener of our show. I don't always listen to the playback. So, you know,
well,
I'm not as necessarily as loyal
that's
as
a little different. That's a little different than a significant other, though. I mean, you know what occurred on the podcast. You were there.
I feel like I should have an obligation to... I mean,
a lot of actors talk about how they don't watch themselves on film and stuff like that. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's a similar situation.
I think we've done enough here, Chris.
I agree.
What do you think?
You gotta give Angie credit. I think she took it like a champ when it came down to it. You know, she was very positive as she left there. You know, look very much like "Go Get 'Em, Guys" and everything, which was, I thought, you know, maybe that's just her being, again, the, would you call it, youthful something or other?
Youthful optimism, yeah. No, Chris, what we want is bitter and stinging and remorseful and what I would do differently next time. That's what we want on our exits. We want bitterness and despair.
Or at least that guy who I've referenced him before, who got blindsided and just absolutely loved that he got blindsided.
That would also be okay. You're like, you know what? I sucked. They were awesome.
Right. Or somebody just stand up and be like, if you guys had kept me around, you guys have been fools or something. You know, like, you guys made the right call here, clearly.
God, it was Jeff. So obvious. It's so obvious it was me. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Why did we even go through this whole 4-hour trial?
How did I not get all 8 of your votes, guys? Come on. I mean, When you get back to camp, whoever didn't vote for me, they're the next one.
We forgot to give them our online presence last time, Chris, so maybe
indeed.
You can tell them where to contact us and find us.
So we can be emailed, and the address is podcast@tc.vanb.net, and we are available on Twitter. Our handle on Twitter is Tribal Podcast, or at Tribal Podcast, I guess, to be super precise.
I agree.
And then our web address for those that maybe got this via some random link and they want to subscribe to the RSS feed is tc.vanb.net, and that's TC as in Tribal Council, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, for those not aware. It's a pun.
I used that. I really
hate it. I told you. It's going to happen, guys. Everybody out there, we're going to make this happen. Join the movement. The old way, 5 minutes ago, was...
The new way, Chris, is to make it a hashtag. Hashtag it's a pun.
But that's what I'm doing, right? Is I'm just doing it orally, right? I mean, the hashtag is the, like, it's the subtext guy, right? It's Kevin Nealon's old bit from when he would do...
Subliminal Man.
Yeah, Subliminal Man on Weekend Update.
Yeah.
But yes, 5 minutes ago was, no pun intended, and we're switching it over to the second you make a pun in, like, a side voice, you say, it's a pun, and you just keep moving on and let everybody else pick up what happened.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Come back to see us next week when we find out if any of the other 12 people on the island will receive a torch. They might. Who knows?
Receive a torch. That's
they
a
have
good point.
It. They don't have torches.
Indeed, indeed.
Right.
All right.
Snuffed 3, and there are 12 torches to be given still. So, I don't know. All right. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.